Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
You're now locked into The Zone with Diamonds and Roses podcast, bringing you one step closer to Pacific Northwest and Southwest Canada baseball news, stories, and history. Proudly fueled by Baseballism, they're America's brand, and Devo Bat Company, professional wood grain bats for the love of the game. And now your hosts, Ben and Travis.
Welcome, everybody, to season 6 of the Diamonds and Roses podcast. We are back after a bit of a hiatus, but we're bringing you some good quality shows as usual. And today we are bringing on a friend from the north, Mr. Jim Swanson of the Nanaimo Night Owls and Victoria Harbor Cats. So welcome back yet again, Jim. How are you today?
I'm good. You're my friend from the south if I'm your friend from the north. Is that how that works?
Yeah, something like that.
Do you feel like you're in the south, Ben?
Absolutely not.
No, I don't feel like I'm in the north either. So I guess we're about even on that. That's good.
Yes.
There we go.
How you been doing, Jim?
Been doing okay. We're doing okay. We've obviously been focusing on getting ready for the seasons in both Victoria and Nanaimo. We have a winter, spring, fall collegiate team as well in the CCBC, the Canadian College of Baseball Conference. At one point, it was kind of funny. Somebody thought we had started an offshoot league or something, and no, it's a CCBC team, the Golden Tide, that's going well. And I mean, you ask how it's been going, saddest part for me, obviously this year already, my mom passed away recently, and that's been a tough part. And people seem to be going through a difficult time with some different things coming out of COVID, but we're here to support the people around us. And I know the one thing with our Nanaimo team is, and we'll get this stuff out of the way quickly. How's that? And, Tina Cornett, who's, a big part of our organization in Nanaimo, her son, Simon, was diagnosed with cancer in September and really has not been able to be much a part of things since then. And I think everybody, understands the challenges there, a 16-year-old being diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma. We've had a couple of people from around the league have showed some support. We appreciate those couple of people. We certainly are giving her every bit of support, and I'm glad to report that she's back to work here as of this week, as we're talking, and raring to go. And so ticketing and some of the logistics pieces that I, had gotten close to the wire, she's now getting further along the way. So it's, so everything is all good.
Well, sad to hear, but good to hear that she's back to work. I don't think we've ever really had a conversation about the Golden Tide, and I want to set the other two teams aside, but I don't think we've really discussed the Golden Tide. Can you, first of all, talk a little bit about this league that Aaron, because I know that you and I have talked personally on a couple different occasions about the differences between Canadian college baseball and American college baseball and the league and so on. Can you discuss a little bit about that?
Yeah. So, I mean, what we decided to do during COVID, and, you know, part of it, we were sort of, you know, we didn't play for 2 years. There was a bit of boredom going on. We were trying to keep ourselves busy and occupied and productive. And so we did two things during that period. One, we opened up a indoor facility called the Edwards Family Training Center. The Players Club youth program is out of there, the Harbor Cats youth program. And then, you know, we applied to be a part of the Canadian Colleges Baseball Conference, which is now 8 teams. There's Nanaimo, which is the VIU Mariners, Vancouver Island University. And I'm sitting outside the Nanaimo Stadium right now. That's where they play. There's teams in Kelowna, Kamloops, and then in Alberta, it's Lethbridge, Calgary, and Edmonton. And also a team in the Fraser Valley, Chilliwack, Abbotsford area of outside of Vancouver. And, you know, it's a low level of college. I would equate it to D3 or a Division II junior college type of a situation. And what it really does provide, and I think it's outstanding, is an opportunity for players, Canadian players, to stay in Canada, not have to pay the rates that they do to go. You know, I got a son who's in college finishing up his, kind of last year in college baseball. He could go for another year. He's still eligible because of COVID and how that played out. But, it's been an expensive thing for our family during that period of time to have him down doing that. And it's less expensive for families to have their students stay back in Canada. There's no out of state or out of country additional fees and things like that that happen when Canadians go down to play college baseball in the States. So it's an opportunity for players who probably aren't focused on the draft or that sort of thing that they may have in the back of their minds, but they want to still play college baseball. They still want to play baseball sport for life, and they want to get a great education. And, you know, Canadian universities are outstanding. Canadian universities, U.S. universities are really good too, but there's obviously some places that have maybe a reputation as, you know, sort of underwater basket weaving type of colleges that get you from high school into other places. The universities we're talking about here that are involved in the CCBC are extremely good academically. And the Golden Tide uses athletes that are going to UVic, University of Victoria, or Camosun College, which in many cases is a stepping stone into UVic for a lot of people. And you can get a full 4-year degree there. But we started that up in the fall of 2021. We're now in our second season. And, you know, head coach Curtis Pelletier, and our staff, we fully support it. It's a chance to get the ballpark moving again, Wilson's Group Stadium at Royal Athletic Park. And we have a lot of fun getting things going there. And we'll actually start, was scheduled to start this coming weekend. There's a bad forecast and a lot of wetness that we've had through the winter, I think, in the Pacific Northwest. So it's an exciting time to get that going in our second full season. And it's got growing pains. There's no question. We started off with really good numbers the first year. We hit some people left the program from academic reasons, mostly didn't make it the first year academically through the first semester. And, you know, when you talk about what college students do when they fail out of university or college, it's usually after the first semester or first year. And we were a brand new program with almost everybody being a first year player. So we were kind of susceptible to that and saw the numbers fall off. And then the numbers going into year two didn't rebound as high as we've needed or wanted them to, but you know, we're here for the long haul, and this program is going to be here, you know, to be a part of our whole program with our group. We own the Harbor Cats, we own the Nanaimo Night Owls, and we own the Victoria Golden Tide of the CCBC. And the indoor facility has been a tremendous, tremendous benefit through the winter rainy months.
What's the recruiting differences between the Golden Tide and the other two programs that you do in the summer?
Yeah, they're wholly different. We're recruiting players to come to either Camosun or UVic, which we don't have an official relationship with, but we're sort of a club program outside of their programs. But the students have to qualify. They have to be academically eligible, not just for the school, but also for the requirements of the team. So we're looking, you know, generally at players coming out of high school baseball, the levels here, and moving into colleges that, you know, have decided they won't want to continue with that education and still play college baseball, but they don't necessarily want to make, you know, the financial and fuller commitment to go all the way down and go to a California or a North Dakota or Arizona or wherever guys have many, many, you know, thousands of options to go to at various levels. This gives them a Canadian option where they don't have to have a passport to go do it. They can stay home and stay at a Canadian acknowledged school. One of the big problems that happens with the U.S. college system is the transferring of credits when, if you ever change schools. It's a big problem, and it's vastly understated by the industry, because they really don't want people to know that sort of the harshest part of going and playing college baseball. There's very few college baseball players that go to the same program for their entire college career and play baseball for the whole 4 or 5 years with red shirt or injury red shirt or whichever it is. There are very few players go to the same program the entire way through. You know, what the CCBC, the Golden Tide, the VIU Mariners, and all the other teams provide up here is a chance to go and play for what's actually allowed in Canada is a 5-year program. And we're very happy to be able to provide that option for those athletes to do that. They can say they played college baseball. It's extracurricular. It looks great on a resume later on. I talked to an HR person a week ago who told me the only people they will put in the pile that they want to go back to when they're taking resumes for a position are people who played team sports. They want to talk to people who played team sports. You know, your background, Ben, I know your background. You're a team guy. The stuff you've done in your life, you don't get by without being a team guy. You can't be the guy who isn't willing to fight through something you might consider to be toxic or difficult. Yep. To be a team guy, you've got a team player, a team person, a team guy or girl. You've got to be ready to go to bat for your teammates next to you and do what's right for the betterment of the team and put your ego aside at times. And that's a really important part of being in college baseball is learning those things and getting that experience.
Okay. And so do these other institutions for these colleges, do they have their own baseball teams, or is this like, or do they not have,
No, it's a full on conference. So there's a spring schedule, just like it's a 32 game schedule. There is some fall exhibition stuff that goes on. Could play some high school teams, could move around and play some sort of, some inter-squad, a lot of inter-squad games. Everybody does a fall World Series inter-squad. Yeah. But you know, by the time it's done, you're probably talking in terms of game action, at least 60 games. And of course, you know, guys in and out of the lineup, cause you're trying to get everybody involved. Programs will have, you know, anywhere from 35 to 55 guys up here.
Yeah.
They're pretty strong. I would say the Okanagan College program, the Coyotes program run by Jeff White, a guy I know very well, would be the best example. PBA program in Lethbridge, another really good example of quality programs with great leadership, and they draw big numbers, and they have good programs with, you know, using good fields, collegiate level fields, and the opportunity to get a tremendous education out of it and move on in life. It really is I don't know where there's a loss in this. It's a win-win-win all the way across.
Okay. And so Curtis is the head coach, for the team. And how did you go about deciding Curtis for this position, and how's that been going for him the last couple of years?
Yeah, Curtis is an all-in guy when it comes to baseball for sure. And he's done a lot of things on the side as well for us. And not on the side, he does a lot of marketing for us and a lot of logistics things for us. And the youth programs, he does a strong job. And, you know, Curtis joined us in 2018 and, you know, he frankly came to me and said, listen, I want to work in baseball. And he had done other things in his life that I don't think were fulfilling for him. And he wanted a chance to do something that was really, grounded him in baseball. And, you know, we've certainly given him the opportunity to do that. And, Curtis he's an outstanding coach and skills coach. He's very organized. He's disciplined, and you know, there's been some parts that we've been able to help coach him on organization and the plans and everything that goes together for all the scheduling and you know, trips and travel and all those different pieces, there's no question that, that Curtis has risen to the occasion when it comes to a lot of that. And he's had some great help too. He's got a pitching coach and assistant coach in Ethan Fox, who's a former Harbor Cat, who's done an amazing job as well. And they make good use of the Edwards Family Training Center and the technology we've got in place with Hit Tracks and Rapsodo and all the things that are there. And it's been a really good opportunity for the players who come to take advantage of it. And we've seen guys join our program who've maybe been in the States and it wasn't for them. They've come back to a more familiar Canadian setting for them, you know, academically probably stronger than where they went to at a junior college somewhere. You know, there's some baseball schools down there that that's kind of what they're there for, and pretty basic academic requirements, but may not get you all that further ahead when it comes to your vocation later in life. The Canadian schools are a lot more focused on that output, that outcome academically. So, you know, we guys are required to take a heavy load of classes, and between Curtis and Ethan, they do a really good job of monitoring that and guiding guys and providing them with any supports they need in that area.
Side note, I mean, you have the training center, and I know that in the Northwest here, you know, we obviously the weather is not as cooperative as in like Arizona and Southern California and in those particular areas. But what do you think that these indoor training facilities have done for those players who are in climates that are not the best this time of year or year round for baseball itself, especially like in Canada?
Yeah. I mean, it's almost a requirement for sure now, but the thing, there's a couple of interesting parts with it that are not to be forgotten. You know, everybody talks about a facility and academies and, you know, the travel ball programs and all the different offerings out there. You know, there aren't a lot of these indoor facilities that have actually proven to be viable. I mean, I'm a baseball guy first and foremost. I did, you know, a lot of baseball stuff, a lot of media stuff for my life. I'm really kind of new to the baseball business and marketing in a lot of ways. I know I've been doing it now for a while, but I still feel like a newbie in those areas. What I do know is that I've been aware of indoor baseball facilities and programs and businesses really that have propped up over time. And the large majority of them, and I would say well over 90%, don't last long term. They end up having changes to them. They end up changing ownership. They end up closing down for a while and having to make up debts and different things like that. Business wise and business viability wise, they are a grind. They are extremely difficult to make successful. And in large part, the measure of success is that it's still open and able to pay its bills. Anybody who's getting into those things thinking that they're a money grab or they sound like a money grab to the athletes and the parents probably, but they're not a big cash cow. They're really not. So we've taken the approach with the Edwards Family Training Center, which we had some donations, hence, you know, the name Edwards Family Training Center and some others, that we've taken the approach of that it's about viability, is about, you know, breaking even, paying our bills. If we have a good month, we put that aside towards some bad months that may come, because in June, July, and August, who wants to go inside? But in, you know, November, December, January, February, and really getting into March area, when everybody's itching to get back going at it again, when you can't go outside, these are necessary programs in many cases now. And, you know, I think it's important for people to support them and realize that, you know, inflation and taxes aren't going down. Everything's growing in terms of costs. Baseball costs have gone up. Equipment costs have gone up. HR, you know, you have to pay people a little bit more, and the taxes on that end up going up. All those things have to be in place. And, you know, I think there's a lot of people that just don't understand, you know, how difficult it is to run a business. And it can be difficult to run one of these businesses, but they are absolutely necessary.
Yeah. And let's talk about difficulty running a business. You know, just over the last few years, you know, with COVID and now coming out of it, you know, you had to take essentially, you know, 2 years off from the West Coast League itself with the Harbor Cats. And then, you know, obviously with, you had to delay it a year with the start for Nanaimo. But what did that do to your organization as a whole? Like, let's talk about some of the negatives, but also let's talk about some of the positives that came out of that time off.
You know what? That's a great question, Ben. That might be the best question you've ever asked me, because you're probably expecting me to say there's a whole lot of positives. And to be honest, I'm not sure I can point out a lot of them. And that's why it's a great question, is because, you know, you do, I mean, everybody is a, you know, you don't go into a job like this without being an optimist, without having, you know, great hope for what you're going to put together and really be positive outlook. I mean, I think we found coming into 2022 season, when we finally could play again, it felt a little bit like, oh my God, we can go again. We should have all this energy built up, because we didn't play for 2 years. We should be all raring to go. And I think once we opened the gates, it was kind of like, oh, we're back. And we kind of exhaled. And I think that was the way we felt about it. Even Nanaimo, the lateness of construction and all the different things that went on and getting that set up, you know, those stories, we've talked about them on your podcast before. I think it was more of a, you know, we're here, and I don't want to say rest on laurels, because that's really not what it was. It was more of a relief than it was an excitement. And I don't think any of us realized what COVID took out of us. I think there was a lot of energy that we expended, and everybody expended. And I say we, I mean, collectively, kind of league collectively, a lot of energy had to be expended just to keep it going, just to keep things on the tracks. And not that there was ever a danger of us going away, because our ownership group is too determined. I think we're a skilled group when it comes to, you know, how we operate. We'd like to think that we bring some good stuff to the table, marketing and operations wise. We're tight on that. Our hotel, our bus, our travel, the team breakfasts, all those things that are in place and impeccable. All those things are really strong. But having those things set up for those 2 years, and then having them, you know, the rug pulled out from underneath you, and honestly, going home, and when the days they were canceled were some dark days, days you went home and, you know, sat down and I sat in my favorite chair and popped a beer and went, well, okay, I guess I gotta figure out what I'm going to do for the next few months, because there's not a lot we can do other than continue to remind people that we're not able to play because of rules outside of our control, but we're going to be here when it's done. So,
well, you know, let me ask you a question on that. Did you feel like at any point where it started like, man, how many times do I have to explain this? And like, does it feel like it's getting old? And I mean, maybe that's not the greatest of questions, but
no,
I mean, that's,
no,
I get it. I've gone through it at times.
I'll answer it this way. At no point before 2020, March 2020, did we have anything in our business plan that said, here's what we would do in case of a shutdown for a year. I was asked once that question. I remember the forum that I was asked at. I'm going to leave out the kind of the form of that, like what would happen? What is it that could halt the business? And my answer was, you know, the big earthquake. I thought that was maybe the only thing that could potentially do it. I don't think Victoria is in much of a danger of getting hit by a tsunami. You know, we have pretty mild and great temperature. Weather's generally not an issue. We went into the 2022 season with a grand total of 2 rainouts in our history. Not a lot of things that were, you know, sincerely debilitatingly outside of our control on how we run our business. But, you know, certainly we didn't have a pandemic clause. I now have marketing, arrangements and contracts and supplier contracts that have a force majeure in them in case of, you know, a God-willed event, right? So, act of God type stuff. So, you know, I never would have contemplated having that in one of our contracts going into COVID. And now, you know, we talked about it clearly as a management and ownership group. You know, what do we do if it's a second year, you know, and, you know, we put things into place to ensure that we could make sure our people all stayed. That was a really important one for me. I'm big on loyalty. I'm big on honesty and integrity. And when somebody shows a lack of honesty or an integrity, I'm pretty quick to turn the page on that because it shows an indication of character. But when people are loyal and stick to their guns and battle with you and alongside you, I'm not the boss of these team. I'm more like the captain on the ice or on the field with my teammates. We're not big enough to have a boss in a 30,000 foot airplane hovering over what we do. I have to roll my sleeves up and get involved too. And I don't understand operations and where the owners are, you know, kind of looking at it from a distance and don't really get involved and get some dirt under their fingernails. I don't understand how that works. I maybe it's because it's not just me, but I do know this, that we made the commitment as an ownership group. We're going to do everything we could to get through whatever years we were surprised. It ended up at 2 years. We were surprised the first year, but then certainly surprised the second year. And then when it leached on and continued where it could have been a third year, that wasn't going to close us down, but it certainly was going to cause for some different approaches, I think, than what we did for the first 2 years. We were going to have to probably, you know, a bunch of us, including myself, paid employee, going to have to take some time off. And some things like that were going to have to be done. The government programs up here, you wouldn't be aware of the spending. They were pretty good and helpful. I mean, I've got some, I think as all of us do about our governments, wherever we happen to live, I've got some questions and maybe criticisms of how some things were done, but I do appreciate some of the programs that were put in place. They weren't perfect, but they were helpful. You know, nobody got rich off of any of the other programs. If anyone thinks that, they're foolish. But certainly, you know, we run a viable business. We're proud that we run a viable business, but we, you know, we're not necessarily about being wildly positive in that realm. We're not about profit. We do aim to pay our bills every year. We do aim to reinvest where it's worthy, increase our staffing where it's worthy. But you know, a third year, what would that have done to us? We still would have been around. Here's the good part. And you asked for a good part and I just found it. In Victoria, baseball has been and gone and been and gone and been and gone so many times. And no team lasted more than 5 years. Well, the Victoria Harbor Cats this year are celebrating their 10th anniversary. And yes, that includes a couple of years off for COVID. But nobody ever comes into our offices anymore. Nobody's on the phone. Nobody in the community at all the things we're involved with. And it's a lot. Nobody comes in and makes any comments about, hey, you guys going to make it? No one questioned us on that. And to me, that was a state of where baseball, our brand, our marketing, our efforts in the community had matured to the point where the community fully had confidence that we would pay our bills with all our suppliers. We would pay our bills. Nobody ever missed a paycheck. You know, all those things that happened during COVID that could have potentially happened during COVID, I should say. So you know, COVID taught us how to be more resilient. I would say that. And COVID taught us how to be flexible and come up with some new ideas. Obviously, the Golden Tide, the indoor training, the Edwards Family Training Center, you know, how we do some things. But we really did, I think, made all the right moves in the end, maybe one or two small mistakes. But the best part is we got through COVID with integrity, with our heads held high, with things done properly, and we're proud to be where we are.
I don't believe I've asked you this question before, but I'm going to go ahead and ask it now. Was there ever a contingency and plan in case of year three going into this, just to say, well, look, like we have new teams in Edmonton and so on in Canada. I believe there's 5 West Coast League teams in Canada now. Was there ever any consideration of just doing an all-Canadian kind of division league for a year?
There was, I think, the 1 year. The first year it didn't go very far. The conversation was, I mean, you have to remember the Nanaimo Night Owls were supposed to start in 2020 and didn't start till, they were announced in 2020, were supposed to start in 21, didn't start until 22. We actually did a series, a little bit of a small series of merchandise that had the number 21 on the back because it was supposed to be our inaugural year. We thought that would be a good thing to put on there, that number, right? Little Roger, I was going to say Roger Clemens, Roberto Clemente number on things, right? But what it did was that, I mean, that third year off, looking back in hindsight and the questions we asked in 2021 about starting up, the right decision was made to not start up and to the border was the issue. We couldn't cross the border. The border, you weren't allowed, vaccinated or not. Vaccines were slow rollouts in Canada compared to in the United States, all those kind of things. We did talk about it. When I knew it wasn't going to happen, Kamloops was eager-ish to go to start up. Victoria, we could have started up and gone and done that. Nanaimo was able to get going, but a lot of the construction for the ballpark wouldn't have been ready, so it would have been the old school experience of this park, not the new and improved. Kelowna was not interested at all, and even giving it a go, they didn't see the value in it. And Edmonton, I don't think they were ready to as of yet, because they were actually going to join the next year anyways. So we didn't get a call on Edmonton coming into the league until I believe it was May of 2020, asking about the potential, if I've got the year right. All the years have been melded together, right? We can't keep track of the years sometimes. Yeah,
exactly.
But it was like it ended up that Kamloops and Nanaimo were supposed to join at the same time, and then Edmonton the next year. And that's not how it worked because of COVID. It ended up bringing all three teams in at the same time. And any further conversation now with the league, 5 in Canada, 11 on the other side. And then we have, any growth that we have to have from here has to happen by twos, just for the schedule's sake alone. You can't have an odd number of teams. Now, I believe it may not be impossible, but it's so close to impossible, it's not worth trying to go to 17 teams without having an 18th team. You have to have it. It'd be dangerous to try it. So there's too many banana peels for that to be tried, in my estimation, although I don't make all those decisions, right? So, a third year would have been really, really difficult, and we would have made probably more drastic decisions to take time off, probably even like a 6-month period where right now, right up to, myself and all our people would have been laid off. And we would have gone to a stage where, we're dormant, kind of monitoring the email and the internet site and the social media, but pretty much going dormant for the next probably 4 to 6 months is likely where that discussion would have gone to, if I'm reading my own room the right way anyways.
You talked about the border, and I know that was a big issue, and it may have played out through most of the season, but I know early on for you and the players, it's those coming from the States into Canada and then vice versa from Canada to the States. Obviously that was a big issue for you. What kind of time did that add on to like planning and so on for both teams?
It really didn't. I mean, we were asked a lot about, what kind of COVID restrictions would we have in the stands? Would guys be wearing masks on the bus? Is vaccination required? Here's a tidbit for you. I know the Blue Jays seem to get hit on Major League Baseball, but I don't want to play in Toronto because the vaccination's required. The vaccination is no longer, and now it's been this way for a while, vaccination is no longer required to enter Canada. It is still required to enter the United States, technically. I don't believe they're checking much on it, but that's the reason that Novak Djokovic, the tennis player, has been unable to play in tennis events. So you got one right now in Indian Wells. He's not able to play in it. Coming up, I think that's the one. Anyways, but U.S. Open, he couldn't play in it. I mean, Djokovic couldn't play at the U.S. Open. It had nothing to do with Canada. That had everything to do with the United States rules. And so there's a bit of a misunderstanding, I think. Blame Canada. It's an old South Park thing, right? But, it's Canada took a far more aggressive approach on restrictions. There's no question. We're a little bit more, you know, small S socialist, and we tend to be a little bit. That's not to mean that there's restrictions left, right, and center, like maybe some people think there are. I'm extremely free to go and do what I have ever done in my life, living here on Vancouver Island and loving that. But I think that some of the restrictions we put in place with hospitals and seniors' homes and indoor spaces, I think they proved out with numbers. We had fewer deaths from COVID than other places. Is that the reason? Seems to be a reason for it. It wasn't a for sure catch-all, but no, the border issue was, you know, we're limited in the number of players that we have up here. We'll carry, you know, 8 to 10 to 12 Canadian guys on our teams in a regular year, you know, pre-COVID, before we even heard about COVID. And we could have filled with some players. I mean, there's the entire Western Canada Baseball League, which is, you know, heavily Canadian players. They have some American guys, but the majority of the players are Canadian. We would have been, you know, using some of those best players, I think, coming into a better league over here. But the border issue, you know, now is behind us. You know, it felt like kind of chasing a ghost when we get asked about border and COVID restrictions and things like that at the time, because I don't know if you guys felt like this down there. We certainly did with some rules that happened here. It felt like the goalposts changed daily, and you can only react to what the rules of the day are. And we weren't getting a lot of notice on what the rules of the next day would be. So there was this example here in Canada where in BC, where they shut down Super Bowl parties with hours of notice. They just simply barred them from happening. And pretty tough to clamp down on it, but most people did kind of obey it and just kind of stayed in their own little circle for that. Happened around New Year's Eve as well. So we just realized early that the rules were ever changing, the situation was ever changing, and we had to be ready to adapt to it no matter what. And that also saved us time, because we couldn't do a whole lot of time predicting stuff we just didn't know.
Okay. Well, let's jump forward here. Give me a quick year-end review for Victoria last year. Some brief highlights.
Victoria made the playoffs. Had a rough first game. Thought we should have won the second game. You know, breaks of the game that happen. Sometimes they're frustrating, but that's what happened. You know, really enjoyed our coaching staff last year. We had three big leaguers on it, with Todd Haney leading it, and Mark Pekaisik is our pitching coach, and Greg Swindell as well. Greg has since had a surgery. Can't come back this year. Mark's work situation, he can't come back. So we've changed the coaching staff. Todd still is our head coach. He's, you know, one of the best summer ball coaches you'll ever have, for his approach and his level-headedness and his just his demeanor and his fun and how he approaches his class. And he does a really good job of steering away from noise that's not warranted, for sure. He's great at that, maybe better than I am, but at that area for sure. But he you know, Victoria, our attendance was down. You know, we're a place that prides ourselves in accurate attendance figures. We did all that we could to fill the park again and do what we could. The weather was atrocious, as we all know, in the Pacific Northwest last year. Hit us especially on home game days. It was a challenging year in staffing and people coming back to work. I don't know where everybody went, but not everybody seems to be back working these days or wanting to work. But we made it through and had a successful season. Curtis was actually took over the GM role for the season, stepped back from that at the end of the year. Christian Stewart is now taking on the GM role, with, you know, my full support you know, I'm still involved in the day to day. That's not going to change. Still glad to support my people in that way and be the leader in that area. And that just simply is not going to change. So, you're probably, your next question is give you a recap of Nanaimo first year.
I was going to jump into that here like now, because I was going to say that I was given not just the privilege, but the honor of helping out in the first ever series that Nanaimo played in here in Portland against the Portland Pickles. I, you know, getting to meet the team, coach Gorman, being the head coach for the first game, and you had Fitz, who's third base coach, and just getting to know the team coming together in those first three games, and then getting the first W in team history, and the first seeing the first home run, the first pitch. I mean, first of all, let me just say that that was amazing experience. I had so much fun, and I cannot begin to thank you enough for allowing me to be able to do that. And it was just a wonderful experience. So first of all, well, thank you so much.
You're very welcome. I mean, you know, obviously we become good friends, and we're, you know, pretty open about a lot of things. You and I talk off the record on a few things for sure too. And it's interesting, you know, you remember the reason Greg Frady, his daughter, was getting married in Bulgaria. And so he couldn't be there for the first, I think it was 8 games of the season. And Gorm, you know, as veteran as you get and as level-headed and as classy as you get, took over as head coach. And we, you know, we had some support for him on the road. And yourself, John Schnatterbeck, who's part of our group and is, you know, committed guy to what is going on with our teams and our efforts, and really an undervalued guy by, I think, a couple people, a really quality individual whose head and heart are all in the right place, gets the game, gets it all. Is a really good sounding board for me on a lot of things. To have you two a part of it, Ben, it was a thank you to you for all the things you've done that I don't think you've been thanked enough by the West Coast League for the things you've done to help to promote it. And, you know, you started to do the podcast hoping that Portland get a major league team. You've adjusted with the times. It still may happen, but you realize there's other great baseball going on. You've talked about, you know, the West Coast League a lot, and you've talked about, you know, the A-ball situations. You've talked about college baseball in the area. We appreciate that. It helps to educate people. I mean, your series in Nanaimo, Coal Ball, you'd never even been on Vancouver Island, let alone in Nanaimo. You'd never seen a lump of coal in Nanaimo that this city was kind of founded on, that industry. And what you did there, if anybody's not listened to it, we're going to start, by the way, Ben, we're going to start reintroducing that series to people. And we will be letting people know, you know, just that they need to go back and revive that listen, because it was the detail and the research and the work you did was impeccable. It was awesome. And I thank you for that. And that we could have you in uniform for our first game, our first win, our first series. You know, it's, I know your family was able to be at least one of the games, and you know, maybe didn't go back after that, but it was great to have you there, and that was meaningful to me, buddy, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, well, I was really great. I can't begin to explain the experience. But then, you know, I got to go up to Nanaimo last year and visited the ballpark with all the wonderful work that with collaboration between Nanaimo, the city, and the ball club, and what they were able to do, and the Soroxen Stadium and Soroxen Club, and everybody, what that city poured into that facility. And I know that we've talked about it. I know Mickey Mantle opened it up, and others, and the history behind that. And if you go back and listen to Coal Ball, you'll hear the whole spiel about Soroxen Stadium and just the history behind that. But just being able to see it, and to me, like I've always said, it's a summer collegiate team playing in a low A facility. And it's not just any low A facility. To me, it feels like more of like a historic old A facility.
Yeah, the bones are fantastic. It's interesting because, you know, my history in the league goes back to 2013, about November of 2013. And, you know, we went through some ownership transformation that wasn't fun very early in my time. And those stories have been rehashed. And I remember, you know, the league wanted somebody to come up to Victoria and make sure we were okay. And I never got the direct report. I got it indirectly, but the report back was, yeah, we don't need to worry. Everything's in good shape in Victoria. The experience is good. Things are rock solid. The signs are filling the outfield fence. The crowd counts here aren't inflated. They aren't manufactured, faked. They're legit. The beer's cold, the hot dogs taste good, all that stuff. And then I, you know, I felt this last year like there was a little bit of reporting back owed, and Nanaimo actually pulled this off. And, you know, we didn't have a whole lot of questions being asked going into the season. Just, you know, are you guys good? Everything fine? There wasn't much check-in on that, if any. And it was more of a, you know, almost looking to check it out later on. And you know, nobody could walk away with a legitimate comment about any concerns they had here. Our, you know, the hotel was solid and did a solid breakfast. The transportation situation was good here. We had a blip, unfortunately, long story, with our gym here. That's rectified here for this year already. Food services was not what we wanted it to be last year because of lateness of construction, different things there. A lot of factors that would take 10 minutes to explain them all, even on a cursory level. But, you know, Nanaimo is, I think, a really strong part of what this level can provide. And it's been fun to already have coaches and programs seemingly prioritizing sending players to Nanaimo. And I think a lot of that, you know, is credit to our coaches, obviously. Greg Frady is just an outstanding college coach. Gorm Heimuller is, you just don't get a better pitching coach. I think he's the best pitching coach this league's ever had. And his track record, you know, nobody can match that. And Sean is our third coach, just outstanding, Sean Fitzgerald. And the things we're able to pull off here this last year, as we raced to the finish line with weather and construction and all those things, it really was, and finishing with a 5-game winning streak and after a struggle early in July, record-wise and results-wise, just really good to be able to pull that off. And we're excited about the second season. Obviously, delays, what I mentioned earlier, you know, Tina and staffing and things like that. We haven't done a lot in some areas like we've wanted to, but we're now racing to the finish line on some of these things. And having a year under our belt and people understanding what the Night Owls are about is just a really strong second season coming up, where we expect to see a pretty good lift on our attendance figures and revenues and ballpark experience items. We're excited on all those things. We're focused on them. You know, we've done what we've done in Victoria for a long time, and I think done it in an okay way. And we're gonna try and do that sort of a game experience here in Nanaimo, and where baseball is legitimate, where baseball is treasured and respected, the game itself. And we'll do the things that are the shiny and sizzle. We'll do those properly too, with respect. And you know, we're not going to get into some of the stuff that detracts from the game. And we think we do and approach this all the right way, and we're excited to continue it.
I've always said that, to me anyways, ever since getting into this, the podcast here, and getting to know a lot of the people within the West Coast League and in high school, college level, and so on, that it's more of a family than it is just a baseball itself. And the reason why I'm bringing this up is that there was an unfortunate circumstance that happened last year at one of your ballparks there at the ballpark in Nanaimo. And I know it was a very unfortunate situation, and it was dealt with the loss of life. And how's the staff? How is everybody doing? I always like to check in on that, because, you know, mental health and awareness is really, really important to me. And it is part of this game, but it not only impacts like the players, but also the staff and everybody that's part of this. But how's the staff doing? But also how's the family member of the individual?
Yeah. Doing? You know what? I appreciate that greatly. Very, very much. I thank you for checking in. You know, there's a couple people who checked in and you know, I thought more might, but I guess not. But, you know, I thank you for checking in. You've asked me this a few times. You know, I'll go open here right now. I've gone through counseling for this, and it was a traumatic situation in front of us. You know, the majority, 90%, 99% of the people handled it exceptionally well. There's maybe, you know, one or two small parts of it that didn't handle it all that well. The staff were good with it. It was traumatic for sure. It was, so June 22nd, Mr. Jerry Carson, who's actually from New Brunswick, but had a lot of family here in the Nanaimo area, was out visiting, and he was helping that night as a 50-50 seller for the Sir Oxman Service Club. And he, you know, just shy of his 76th birthday, he had a cardiac event, and, you know, pretty much, you know, it turns out at the end he was no longer with us by the time he probably hit the ground. And, but, you know, the people worked on him. I know that a nurse named Amber, a military doctor happened to be there, worked on him. We got 911 right away. We got ambulances, fire truck, people there to work on him, and they took him to hospital and tried and did everything they could, but weren't able to hold him. And very, very sad. I mean, the tie-ins are so, you know, unbelievable. I don't think many in our league probably realize how much tie-in there was with this situation. You know, Mr. Carson's son, Mike, become a good friend of mine. He does all the signage at our ballpark through his company Sign Zone. You know, him and his wife had a player, Cody Hendricks, from Bakersfield, Cal State Bakersfield, at their home last year. You know, Mike, his son Connor played ball with a number of the guys that were on our team. They all knew who Jerry Carson was. They knew Grandpa Carson. And, you know, the tie-ins with it that night and how tight the community, it showed how tight the community is, was something I'll never forget. And, you know, we had an AED on site. We now have two. We had first aid. You know, our first aid person was actually off because of COVID that night, but we had a backup plan. You know, we had all these things that were in place. And, you know, it's really important. You talk about an emergency action plan, and there's an opportunity for, you know, teams at all levels to learn from what happened to us that night. And, you know, we're ready to have that dialogue and that conversation at any point. And to, you know, give a real life situation. I've been involved in baseball for many years, events right up to international and national and Western Canadian provincial, all these events that I've been a part of in leadership and pro ball, and it's never happened. It's never happened once where we had a situation where somebody passed away at the park. You know, unfortunately, a couple of minutes after it happened, maybe an hour after it happened, somebody tweeted out that somebody got hit by a baseball at our ballpark and died. And that's, you know, not even close to what happened. Right. So, you know, challenges like that, and the things that can be learned from some of the minutia, some of the details, there's an opportunity there. We're going to take every advantage of that opportunity with our organizations, for sure, with Victoria and Nanaimo. And we've done that. And it's been a part of our focus in the off season has been to really hold those conversations and to get things out that way. And, you know, I that very night I talked to a counselor all the way home, and then again and again, many other, you know, coffees and meetups and whatever else, and it's been an important part of us being able to cope with what happened that night and realize that, you know, unfortunately it was Mr. Carson's time. We're very sad that it happened, but if we could ever have done anything, that 1% chance that you can, you know, hold on to somebody, you know, we want to make sure we do that. And I think that should be everybody's focus from that event in gaining information.
Well, I appreciate you discussing that. I know it was an important event. I know it's something big that happened last year, and I always like to check in, make sure you're doing all right, and, you know, see how the team's doing and then how his family's doing. But I really want to end on a positive note with you and just kind of hear what can we expect this upcoming season for both teams?
Expect great baseball and great entertainment, tremendous food, and hopefully the weather that makes that all come together. I mean, that's the one thing we can't control. One exciting thing that we're about to announce in Nanaimo is that we've secured an infield tarp. We have a full infield tarp that'll be at that park this year. I think it should be required equipment at every single park in the league. I think at any level like ours or above us, indie ball, you know, A ball, any kind of level, a infield tarp should be required. That's my view. We're glad to provide that. We're gonna live to those to standards like that and be focused on those positives. It's actually the same exact tarp that the Vancouver Canadiens single A team just ordered. So it's a quality tarp. And what's important about it for us is that the sponsor, Maxim Insurance, stepped forward to work with us on us, on the tarp. The main rain that happens in the Pacific Northwest up here and in BC and on Vancouver Island is, you know, through the fall, you know, winter and into spring. We don't generally get a lot of rain in July and August and even September, maybe June, we do get a bit of it. But this tarp is going to be much more advantageous for the VIU college program in Nanaimo, or the premier baseball, the high school level league here, or the minor baseball programs. It's going to help them more than it's going to help the Night Owls. But we are glad to be here and be part of this community and be doing this. New PA system going in this year that will also benefit those groups that they haven't had to do any fundraising for. They haven't had to do any logistics work. They're just going to have to show up, and it's going to be there, and it's going to kick some butt. It's going to be awesome. So we're excited for, and there's an additional set of seating that's going in that couldn't get done last year. We can't wait to get the bathtub bar going again, because that was a really fun and unique. I don't know that there's another spot in baseball that has a bar on the field in center field. Yes, there's a fence there for those who are curious. But it's such a unique place to sit and watch a ball game and take it in with the backdrop of the cliffs behind the ballpark. It's picturesque. It's a postcard.
Yeah. That bar is pretty cool. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Well, Jim, you know, I can't say enough how much I appreciate your time and just jumping on with me today to record this episode, but to have you come back on. I mean, you know, having you as a regular is very much appreciative.
Thank you, buddy. You always pick up my spirits when we touch base, and can't wait to see you at some point along the past this summer, and hope that happens a few times, not just once or twice.
Yeah, I'm hoping to bring my family up there to Nanaimo and Victoria this summer, so we can catch some West Coast League games and Vancouver, Victoria, and Nanaimo, BC. So I'm looking forward to that.
You got a key to the city. You know that. We love having you here.
I got the little tiny key.
Yeah, that one's to the washroom. So at least that you can use that area. So that's good.
Yeah. Well, that'll do it for this episode of the Diamonds and Roses podcast. I appreciate you taking the time to listen to this. We'll be out with more quality episodes. And peace out.